94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo. And, of course, happy holidays to everybody out there. We're celebrating holidays in December. I love the holidays. And Electric Drum, of course, is all about our community and all about highlighting folks in our community who done some great things. And I have with me in the studio today Ricky Allen Drawn. You probably already know him because I'm quite sure you've heard his music here on YBC. You've seen him perform. And he's been around for a long, long time. He's a veteran in the business, right? How you doing, brother?
I'm hanging in there. How you doing there, New Haven?
That's good. So, let's talk about you. I haven't had a chance to really talk to you about your life, right?
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about the music and, you know, right, these records that come out and we have these interviews. But today I really want to get into, you know, who you are. Right?
Okay.
And how did you get here?
Right.
So you grew up in Hampden, Cheshire, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about, yes, talk about, you know, you growing up.
Well, I'm the youngest of my crew. My brother Darryl, and then my older brother Randy. We're all in the sort of the tech field in some way, shape, and form.
Right.
My father was also in the tech industry, so that's sort of what is probably why we sort of were bitten by the tech bug. But so I was always sort of in the tech field in one way or the other. But at the same time, I was also, as a musician, always in the church, kind of doing my thing as a vocalist. You know, I started out, you know, just basically singing probably at 4 years old, just randomly. You know, the typical responsibilities that of, you know, the typical black household, where you have to sort of find your way to church every Sunday and find some way to make it work for you. But you know, we come from an extremely talented family and musically. As a matter of fact, on this particular project, you know, Kevin Monroe is my cousin. So there's an example. His father is Julius and the Soul Corruptors. So,
okay.
So my father played drums. Everybody sang, or they did something that basically, you know, it was almost like, you know, the music calms the savage beast. So they always wanted something for you to do to sort of keep yourself occupied as a child.
Right.
So all of them sort of did something musically.
And the project he's talking about is a new project that's be coming out in January sometime,
yes,
right? You know, he does have a single, Oh Holy Night, which we'll be playing when we end this interview. You know, Ricky has really been just a stalwart when it comes down to just music, period. But this particular record for the holiday season is a must-have. I love it. You'll be hearing it on our station constantly, you know, throughout the holidays. So you went to Hampden High,
yes,
as you had mentioned to me.
Yes.
And you sort of were a little ahead of, you know, most of the kids there. And you took some courses at Yale at the same time that you were going to Hampden High, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those programs where it allowed for you to sort of be a little bit more advanced. I mean, if for some reason you had another field of interest, in my case, it was the arts. It allows for you to sort of take your major subjects along with them out and about. I also had visual artistry as well, so it was sort of like a version of like the, you know, ECA, but, you know, with along with all of the upper end classes.
You right. Know what I mean? And you had an interest in engineering.
Yes.
Right. Yep. And that came kind of from the family, because the family is,
yeah, you know. I mean, you know, with my son, I mean, I'm starting to see that there, you know, there are certain patterns I didn't realize. I thought it was all, you know, genetic, whatever. But, you know, but I'm starting to see some of his characteristics in that, you know, I don't know if it's genetic or it's just social, you know, exposure. But, you know, he does sort of, you know, gravitate towards the math and sciences more so than the language arts.
How old is your son?
13.
Okay. Yes. Great age.
Yeah.
All right, great. Any interest in music? Does he have an interest in music?
He does. You know, it's one of those things where he has an interest in music, but not necessarily as a vocalist. I find him, you know, whenever he doesn't think I'm watching, I find him doing a couple of things that give me a little bit of knowledge that he has the music DNA, you know. But, you know, I can't say that he's a vocalist as of yet.
Right.
He seems to have he's definitely going to have a bigger, a deeper voice tonight. And he's going to be much taller, but that isn't difficult to do, right?
So, you graduate out of Hampden.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you decide that you want to go to school. What school did you go to?
Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. It's out of Troy, New York. It's RPI. Everyone knows it as. It's an all-engineering school.
Right. And so what type of engineering?
Mechanical engineering. Mechanical engineering, and, you know, they always ask you to sort of pick a sub, you know, so that was, you know, industrial engineering and things of that nature. My initial intentions were to go into, actually, I shouldn't say that. The initial intentions were to go into robotics, things of that nature.
Okay.
And then I found that it kind of pigeonholed me into one area. And then I chose, and my main reason for going into that is because my real initial objective was to go into the medical field in some way, shape, and form, whether it be, I didn't want to be a doctor necessarily, but I wanted to go into a field that would allow for sort of, you know, artificial hearts or artificial, you know, whatever the case may be, applying my mechanical engineering skills more so. And then I just felt, you know, I'm a little, probably the artist in me. The first patient I lost, or the first situation that I felt I could have changed, it probably would have haunted me the rest of my life. So I just felt, let me just go into, you know, the actual application, the applied sciences. And that's when I became into the nautical field. I became, actually, aeronautical. I worked for Sikorsky for a little while. I worked in the fuselage department. I basically designed the helicopters, you know.
Okay.
So I was there as a lead engineer there for quite a while, but all the while still maintaining all of the things that I like to do outside, you know, the music and this, that, and the other. But yes.
Yeah. So, so tell me, I mean, the balancing the two, right? I mean, obviously, you know, engineering is about really... It's artistic in a sense,
right?
You know, but music like comes from the soul, right? How do you go from one thing to the other without losing yourself?
Well, it's interesting. I think that the music probably helps me a lot, and not becoming, you know, I've had relationships in the past where they've said that I am so one mind. I think that the I don't like to use the word geek, but I believe that what prevented me from becoming the geek that many are in my field is the music.
Okay.
You know, it allowed for me...
Because you're cool. That means you're cool.
Right. You know what I mean? So it allowed for me not to be, it didn't help that. I mean, it didn't hurt that my brothers and cousins kind of came before me. So I was, you know, they were like, oh, that's one of the drawings, you know.
You know, it's interesting because when you talk to kids, right? And I want to talk about that a little bit, right? And they look at you as an artist, right? But then you're able to then talk to them about engineering, which that's an area that a lot of African Americans don't go into.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I own DCI Resources. And so oftentimes outside of presenting what I offer in the form of education, I have to provide, but I also... It ends up being just because of my physicality, I end up becoming somewhat of a role model to some degree. But I try to explain to them, first of all, you know, and, you know, many may not agree with me, but I believe that your role model should be, you know, should start at home. And then it should go from there and, you know, and find, because a lot of artists, whether they be, you know, in the entertainment, regardless of whether it is, if they're sports figures or whatever the case may be, I believe that, you know, people should recognize that they're humans and they make mistakes. And so, you know, your role model should really start from home, and then it should go from there. And then you should make, you know, healthy decisions as to who you're going to look up to. And then pick those items that seem to give you direction.
You know? And as far as, first of all, fam out there, I'm Juan Castillo, it's Electric Drum. You're listening to a conversation between me and Ricky Allen Drawn, a recording artist who... We have connections because of the music, but interestingly enough, you know, we're finding out a lot of things about his life that a lot of you didn't know, and one of those things is the fact that he's, you know, he's a mechanical engineer, right? Yes. And he went to school for it, and actually has his own company, DCI, you know, which we'll talk about that a little bit and what you do, and, you know, we're just starting to talk about how important it is for African Americans to be involved in engineering.
Yes.
You know, it's a great field, lucrative,
yes,
you know, good pay. So if you're talking to a kid, I mean, what kind of subjects and what did you have to, how did you prepare yourself for that field? Because we're going to get into the music in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
But this is fascinating to me, right? What did you focus on early on in order for you to move forward in the whole engineering area?
Well, the first thing, I always open with, you know, at any of these forums where I'm providing, you know, direction and, you know, somewhat of a big brother, I always tell them to make sure that, you know, the field that you go into is something you love to do, number one. I happen to like the maths and sciences. My son kind of likes it, but he's doing it more so because, you know, I ask him. It's kind of difficult for a 13-year-old to just love math and love science, you know. So, I mean, I am realistic in that regard. And again, maybe that's the geek in me. I actually did like it. But it was more the challenge of finding what X equals, more so than anything. Yeah. I wasn't concerned with finding it and how that would equate to salary, you know. So I find that you should not pick a profession based on monetary gain, you know what I mean? And that's even within the artistry, because you will find you will get what you get on the out, and you know, and in certain cases it might be extreme disappointment. You put a lot of work into it and didn't necessarily get the correlational value, but I found that just following through whatever you start, once again, even in the math and sciences, finish the equation and somehow or another.
Yeah, so it's math and science, really, right. and you know, that's an area that you know, most people don't like. Right. But by the end of the day, if you're going to be successful pretty much in this world, two areas, including the English language, that are extremely important for any job.
I really believe that language arts is actually more difficult. I really do, because there is no logic to it. Do you know what I mean? And I always tell my son that. I say, you know, and all the kids, I just say, you know, when you go to the ATM and you take money out of the bank, you pretty much don't know how to operate a computer before you realize it. You know, I always equate that to, you know, a 2-year-old Spanish kid and knows fluent Spanish, as opposed to someone who obviously has gone to school, studied Spanish, and they don't know it as well as this 2-year-old. They've only been on Earth 2 years. This person has got a PhD in Spanish, but yet this 2-year-old can speak better. In my opinion, I find that, you know, that in and of itself provides you with some sort of concept of what I mean. Looking at something tangible, such as X plus Y equals Z, in my opinion, is much easier, because there is an answer. Whereas though in the language arts, you know, reading in language arts, there's a lot of
nuances.
Exactly, and variables.
Right.
You know.
So, you take a lot of artists today.
Yes.
Recording artists.
Yes.
Producers. Promoters.
Yes.
That sink themselves into that particular field, which is a difficult field to make it,
right?
And don't have a backup plan, right?
Yes.
So, in your case, you love engineering, so that wasn't an issue for you, but you also love music, right?
Yes.
And so you went at it both ways. Now, what that did for you, because it's never a smooth ride for an artist, you know. Music is about beauties in the eyes of the beholder.
Yes.
One person will say, this is a hit. Another person says, it's garbage, right? You know, and so that's what determines, how well you're going to do and how successful you're going to be in music, right?
Yes.
And in some cases, I know a lot of artists that they don't make music for that purpose.
Right.
They're making music based on how they feel and what's coming from them, and whichever way someone takes it, they do. But we're going to get back to the music, but let's talk about your company, right? Because that has paid the bills for many, many years that you've been working with the whole thing with the artists, and you get paid very well with that too.
Right.
I know that. You know what I mean? But tell me about DCI.
DCI is an IT firm. I have 5 locations now in Connecticut. I don't know if you know that by now, but I have 5 locations. And they basically are all relative to the 5 workforce investment boards. They have nothing to do with the WIBs, but it was very strategic that I put an actual location in each of those areas to accommodate basically all of Connecticut. I'm jumping ahead by stating that I just recently had was recipient of a huge award. It's actually a $4 million grant. And I don't like really quoting dollars, but it's really just it's my
Give me
company.
A dollar, man.
Right. Nah, but it's not just my company. It's maybe four different companies that that were a recipient of this award. And it is it's called the Tech Hire Initiative. And what the Tech Hire Initiative is an initiative that basically addresses the need, not just in our community, but just in the United States. Basically, every state has been sort of recipient of this award. Senator Christopher Murphy is the one who lobbied for Connecticut, and he was actually at our first graduation, very happy with the results. Obviously, his name was on the line here. So the initiative was to address the sort of plight, and that is that there's about 700,000 unfilled IT jobs that just have to be outsourced because we don't necessarily have the tech talent. So it's not so much an African-American thing as much as it is an American thing. But that only makes that much more the issue as it relates to African-Americans.
So your company trains people in IT?
Yes.
Wow.
We train them in high-end credentials. And so it's not just someone who, and we have probably three levels. And I like to say three levels, an entry level. And then we have a mid-level. And that mid-level, I like to speak of it as the launching pad to get into the actual third level, which is the tech hire level. And these jobs, minimally, you come out $80,000, $90,000 a year jobs, but it's not an easy a task. And that's the reason why I brought two levels lower, because we can't assume that someone coming into this program has the necessary skills to jump right in. It's only, in certain cases, a 3 to 6 month course. So those programs suggest that you already have some form of background in the IT field. You just don't have the credentials, and you just need the extra nod. The ones prior to that will prepare you for that.
Your family and yourself, you guys got into this very early.
Yes.
When no one else was even thinking about this issue, right? There weren't any iPads, there weren't any iPhones and so forth. So how long you guys have been doing this now?
I don't even know. It's a good question. Because my brother started out. I was a little brother.
Darryl.
Right. And, they used to call us the Black Bill Gates. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
It was a cool thing. Yeah. But, and by the way, it started out as Drawn Conclusions. A lot of people might remember the old
that's
school
right.
Drawn Conclusions,
right? That's right.
And just to give you a small little story on that, Drawn Conclusions was created basically in probably a 5-minute decision, and that was my mom who is kind of like Oprah. She's like, okay, you guys have this area of expertise. Let's do something with it. So.
Big ups to your mom, man.
Yes,
I love her.
Yes.
Big up, mom.
Good luck. Right.
you got to mention.
No, exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my brother Darryl was installing a network for, do you remember attorney, that was the major attorney, because Darryl's older than me. The attorney, what was the big attorney?
I'm drawing a blank.
I'll remember it. But so he installed it. It was my mom's friend. She's sort of the socialite, so to speak. So he went down to the law firm, installed their entire network. And so he was like, "Oh, great, son." So she was like, "Great. Are you going to pay my kid?" So he said, "Well, blah blah blah." So she said, "I'll tell you what. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to incorporate my son's company." And then so Darryl at that point had to just make up a name right on the Drawn Conclusions. It was
right.
So that's how we went into business, but we had no intentions at that point of doing so. How DCI, a lot of people don't realize that there were two separate companies. There's Drawn Conclusions, and then there's DCI Computer Center. Drawn Conclusions was the entity that really just did network installations and things of that nature, hardware and software implementation. And then DCI Computer Center was the training component, and that's what I basically did most of. And I think that my brother just more or less, was like, okay, you're out there as a singer more, so you like people, like you can go out there and do the whole social thing. So I said, okay, fine. So DCI Computer Center was born. So there was always two different organizations sort of coexisting at 488 Whaley.
Right.
And then what happened was this thing started getting, sort of metastasizing from there, and it got really big. And they started doing, they started requesting things outside of just computing. So that's when I decided to, and this, that's around the time when a lot of things were sort of being made noted, notable that it would be in your best interest to convert over to LLCs. So I said, well, let me take the name computer out so that it did not give the wrong, you know, it didn't suggest the wrong thing. And so DCI Resources LLC was born. And so that's what it is to this day. And we do a lot more than just that. We do a lot of government procurement. So we do some big networking and IT, just IT-related fields. I mean, I can go on and on about the different bullet items under that category. But if anybody knows about NAICS codes, it pretty much is from the root to the tutor when it comes to what we do under that particular code, the government code that you can operate under.
Right. So, okay. Let's go to the music.
Right.
Okay. So, do you remember the song or something that you heard on the radio or your mom played that that you said, you know, I like to do this?
You know, my mom was sort of like the one, everyone even to this day tells me, I remember your mom's parties. You know what I mean? It was like that typical blue light in the basement type thing, and cars would just be lined up. And so I would always sort of find myself, I mean, I'm sort of even envisioning it now from our house back in the day. And I would just sort of be right on the stairs, just listening to everyone having a good time downstairs. I think that that's what it was. It was like listening to everyone have a good time and just listening to the records. And I sort of, I think that, and I don't know if other singers can relate, but I was more mimicking them, if anything, more so than, and I just think that as time.
Luther.
Right.
I remember you sound like
Luther. Yeah,
one
and
time.
A lot of people, and it's funny because I had a situation where I go into the studio with my first record.
Yes.
And you know, I'm only but so big, right? And it was somewhat of a compliment when they demanded that I sing right there in front of 10 executives. And I was a little nerve-wracking because I don't ever get stage fright, but that particular day I was a little nervous. I was a little quivery in the voice, but and it was a bit of a compliment because they just didn't think it was me. You know, they thought it was some 300-pound guy, you know, big dude, you know. So I said, "Nah, that's me." You know what I mean? So Luther is definitely a major influence, but it's weird because if you really listen, you'll hear strange influences like Karen Carpenter. You know, like, why would you expect me to sound like that person? Maxwell, I remember, and I think it was back, I think you did something where you Maxwell had come out with the latest single or something like that. I don't know, I think it was the last album or one. And everyone's like, oh, I heard your new song. And I'm like, well, I know it's not mine because I had, you know, I did have one out, but it was only out for a hot second, but I doubt it had that level of rotation. And so, you know, I said, no, I guarantee you're listening to Maxwell. So it was a nice compliment, but once again, I know it wasn't me. It wasn't mine.
Right.
So, and I do have a tendency of just taking songs that, and this is what I always loved about Luther. He would take a song, even a remake, and he would interpret it.
Make it his own.
Right. And that's really what.
And you've done that.
Yeah. I take songs and I flip them on their back.
Yeah, you have.
It's sort of a celebration to the song, you know, more so than anything.
Yeah, right. Man.
But a change is going to come, I think, is the answer to your question. I think that
A change is going to come.
I have people on the street that come up to me. And I remember when my son was real little, these strangers would come up to me regularly and just start singing, you know, I was born.
Yeah.
And they would say, Daddy, you know, do you know that person? I said, no. Absolutely. Until in the back of my mind, I was like, oh my God, he's going to think that all these people know me and one day go with him if for some reason they should call. So, yeah, but that was the one that seemed to this day. As a matter of fact, the producer of this CD, this single, and actually my project, Chris Big Dog Davis, he's actually going to feature that song on the project.
Big up to Chris.
So,
yeah.
And one of the inspirations is because of all that's going on in the world. You know, I sing that song. I don't do anything really risque anyway, you know what I mean? But on my shows, I've never been that type of performer, but I always end my show with some form of positive song. It's just been a tradition that I've always celebrated. And that one is usually the one that I go to, you know, Change is Gonna Come. It's a nice song.
You've never really taken a break, right?
No.
You know what I mean? You always constantly performing.
Right.
And then you go in the studio. Which one do you enjoy the most?
I enjoy the live. I'll be honest with you. I think that that was the reason why I don't do much recording. I do a lot of it, but I don't release it. The one thing I remember when we first started doing, you know, I have a couple of my cats that are, you know, sort of in that era, and they were like, you know, I was the only one, if you remember, doing a lot of live shows, you know, back, right. You know, and so they would always go, I mean, you hang around with these old cats, and they don't realize that once again, and it's one of the things that I think my mom taught me, and that is just sort of just kind of listen, you know, kind of listen out for and be less quick to talk, but listen. And I would always just absorb everything, you know. I would watch artists do what they do. Why did they turn that way? How did they work their way into actually talking into a song? I'd say 50% of it is just singing, and 50% of it is everything else. You know, how do you get into the song, tell a story, this, that, and the other. And so I really believe that I appreciate the energy that I get from the audience more so than anything. And when I do go into the studio, I tell them, shut all the lights off, because I actually have to transplant myself into as if I'm on stage. And some of the rawness comes through, because when you go into the studio and you're trying to get a perfect note, or you're trying to get a perfect riff or a run, it comes through, you know, artificial, in my opinion, you know.
Well, I got to stay with you. Speaking with Ricky Allen Duran, recording artist here in the city, also an engineer, you know. Yeah. We found out some new stuff today. And so, musically, right?
Yes.
Obviously, most artists pull from their own experiences and
yes.
what is going on in life. Yes. You got to live, right?
Yes.
You got to live.
Yes.
As you get older, you yes. know, you supposed to be getting wiser.
Right.
So, you know, you could send some messages yeah. out there and so yes. forth and so on. Talk to me, though, about the other area that most people that interview folks don't right. ask this question, right? right? How important is it? Because you're close with your band.
Yes.
I want you to talk about
yes.
your band.
Yes.
And I want you to talk about that relationship.
Well, I mean, they're basically like my big brothers and my uncles. If you remember, again, when I started with them, I couldn't even really get into clubs. I wasn't old enough, you know what I mean?
And mention their names, man.
Yeah. Oh, we got they have changed over time, but
of
we
course.
Have Willie Moore, that's my bass player, that's yes. my man. Terry Billups, my percussionist. We have James Moore on drums. Those two are brothers. The entire Moore family is extremely talented, and so I relate to them a lot because they sort of have a musical family as well. It's like the Jacksons. We have several keys. I probably have four keyboard players because they are all very accomplished, and so as a result, they're out on the road with famous people. Aaron Rodgers is one of them. Man, Aaron out there doing his thing. He hasn't been with us for a second because he's out there doing stuff with Chris Brown and this, that, and the other. We have Tom Powell, Martin Parker. Let's see. I'm trying to remember them all. I know they're going to kill me if I don't remember. We have Pat. We have Pat Williams on guitar. He
yes.
plays with a lot of
yes.
a lot of artists out
yes.
there. Let me see to the left, to the right. I'll remember them. We always travel with background singers. We always travel with the horn section, depending on the situation.
So let's get back. Let's,
yes.
So the relationship is there. Started out when you were young, but I noticed one thing,
yes.
right? It's like there's some artists that say, okay, you know, that's the band. This is the song.
Yes,
I'm going to take care of the lyrics. You guys take care of the sound,
yes.
right? That's not you.
No, I'm very instrumental. I mean, I didn't even realize it, but I have a sort of style. Strangely enough, it was displayed on this particular single. I usually start the song off very much. I like to tell a story. This particular Big Dog, he did a very good job in understanding everything I wanted in this particular single, because it was, once again, it's a classic song. And I did not want any of that classic element to be lost. But I wanted to maintain my style, which is to start off sort of and, you know, retard the front end and then get into the song. This particular song features a gospel element. It features a jazz element. It features a pop element. Very much R&B. It does it all in one song without
Kevin Monroe and Devotion.
Yes, that's my cousin.
Simone Brown, Vanessa Brown, Kyle Brown, Marguerite Middleton, Lisa Brown, yeah. Melissa Johnson.
Yes, and we'll be seeing them later on today. Actually, I'm recording the video shoot today.
That's awesome.
Yes, right.
So I assume that you have that same relationship with your producers, like Chris, right? Like
yes,
you get involved with the arrangement and all
yes.
that, right?
Yeah.
So you just don't leave it.
No, and I mean, I was very happy that they, you know, that they were amenable to that, because a lot of, you know, I shouldn't say a lot of producers. I think most good producers do allow that, because, you know, you have to have the artist has to actually feel the song.
Yeah.
And if they don't, I mean, I can tell a mile away when a singer just sang a song that they were given and they had no involvement. And I don't know if it's just something that I have the ability to hear. And some of them, maybe that's just how that artist responds. There is a point within my singing career where, and I think it was, you know, when I first started out, I really didn't experience anything. I didn't have a kid yet. I didn't have a lot. So for me to write about anything, it's just ridiculous. You know what I mean? And it would just be what I think it is. You know, when someone says, oh, I can, you know, I know how you feel. And then they would like, no, you don't. Yeah, so that's why I always make sure when it's something that I can't relate to, I always say, I can only imagine.
You know, you haven't been in love enough times. And, right. and lost.
Right. Now I can write a full, you know, compilation, right? You know what I mean?
I mean, that, you know, and most artists, man, yeah. that's where it comes, right?
It really does. And I mean, they used to call me an old soul, and they just don't know. I'm just singing Otis Redding's song the way I think, you know. But I would always tell some of these artists, you know, now that I'm sort of, you know, seasoned in the game, I'd always say to them, you know, when you're singing a song, I don't care what it is, whether it be My Funny Valentine, whatever the case may be, and they got a smile on their face, they don't realize that that's not that happy a song. So how are you, if you stubbed your toe, would you be laughing or would you be crying, right. you know? Right. So I always make sure that they understand what the song is about so that they can sort of emote that, you know, and the audience will actually feel it. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that when artists are wearing shades on stage, a lot of times they're in their own element. They just don't want people to see the vulnerability, or they don't want them to see them go to another place. You know what I mean?
If you had to use one instrument right. to sing a song to accompany you,
right.
what would that instrument be?
Ah, the organ.
The organ?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And that's because it has sort of a gospel, the gospel flair brings me to a comfortable place. But weirdly enough, and here's this weird, is one song that we're doing where I'm bringing in a slide guitar, which is you only see typically in country music.
Right.
But it's typical of me to just do something, you know, anti to the norm. You know what I mean? And I don't know if it'll work. You know, and strangely enough, I was part of a subsidiary of Epic Records, right? And they flew me down to Nashville. And you know, I'm sure you know that there's but so many people on here that are tan.
Yes.
Right. So I go down there, and I was one of few that actually sang at the Grand Ole Opry, and I was actually right next door to Vince Gill. And as I sat there listening, prior to me going up, for that matter, after, I just love that instrument. I just love that instrument. I don't know what it is about it, and not many instruments can be defined within one genre of music. So I found that to be somewhat fascinating. That you know, there's always a guitar. There's a guitar in rock music or in R&B. There's very few instruments that really only find its way in one genre, and I find that to be, you know.
Okay, so we're gonna get into the music business now.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So today, I mean, it's crazy because a couple of days ago I saw the Grammy nominations.
Yes.
Right? And so you had R&B and traditional R&B. I'm
yes.
like, really?
Right, right.
Okay, what is this now? Right?
Right.
You know, you got
right.
a take on that?
You know, I do, and that's because art is art. You know, I had a discussion with someone. I know this is off the topic, but I had a discussion with somebody about visual artists and the fact that, you know, when you go to a museum, are you looking at the true Rembrandt? Are you looking at a facsimile? And if you don't know the difference, then are you really, you're looking at something that's not the case.
Yeah.
So, you know, it starts to get into other aspects of reality, of artificial intelligence and things of that nature, you know. But I don't find that when you start to quantify and and departmentalize music, you know, I don't really like that aspect because, you know.
Well, that's interesting because at one time,
right,
there weren't any R&B radio stations, any yes. hip-hop stations. There right. were just radio stations.
Right.
And they played everything.
Exactly. You know why I think I feel that way? Is because I remember when I first started in business.
Yeah.
And I didn't necessarily want to be called necessarily... it wasn't because of anything racial, but I wanted to be appreciated for what I've done, not necessarily because of what I've done as a black person. So when you say, you know... I don't want someone to ask for my services at my company because I'm black, or because it's almost the anti. I mean, someone may not want it because I'm black. Mm. Just do it because you know it's a quality product, and that's that. I tell my staff that all the time. I said, you know, I don't mind being the face of my company, but the product is the face of the company.
Mm.
You know, do your job properly, and I guarantee you will be paid.
Well, it's not. Well, it's. I mean, and I think that, you know, as African Americans, we have to some degree, we've been forced to.
Oh no, I can talk on that completely. Right.
To wear it on our sleeves.
Yes.
Right. But by the same token, though, right, we don't want any preferential treatment because of it.
Exactly.
Right. You know, make it an even right. make it Absolutely. An even feel.
Right. Right. The main reason why I say that. And, you know, if I had 5 hours to explain, it would make all the good sense. But the reason why is because we have a large enough community within our own to be able to not rely on anyone other than those who are interested in good product. So you should not have to celebrate anything other than that you know your job, you know, and not be fearful of who possibly might not buy your product because you made a statement. You know, I find myself right now always tiptoeing around the fact that, you know, are you Republican, are you Democrat? Well, I mean, it's quite clear, you know, what I am. I shouldn't say some people are. Right. But, you know, back in the day, you wouldn't necessarily know, whereas though now it's quite clear. Mm-hmm. And so you find, you know, driving down the street with someone with a Trump sticker, and I said to myself I wouldn't say any names, but
yeah,
and then you pretty much will look at that person differently immediately, you know, because you have no choice but to say, oh, okay, so this is what you're all about. Whereas though before I could be hobnobbing with someone that completely has a certain they see things in a way that I don't, and I would never know it. I could be friends with them for 20 years and never know.
Well, you know, because people are wearing it on their sleeves. Yes. And yes. The country has become very divisive,
right?
You know, because of a lot of reasons, right? And one him,
right?
You know,
yes.
Well, he's one of the reasons,
right?
But it's not just him alone,
right?
But in any case, so let's get back mm-hmm. musically, right?
Yes.
You know, you must love to do this, man, because yes. you've been at this, and you are the poster cat,
right?
For a, even if I don't get a hit record,
yes.
this is who I am. I'm a singer.
Yes,
I'm a singer, yes. And I'm gonna sing, right?
Absolutely.
And you've been singing for years, and every time I see you, it's not like, well, you don't have to sing to make money. Obviously, we already talked about that,
right?
And so, but you sing because you're a singer.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
and that's what it's been about, right? For you,
yes. Yeah, I when I go on stage, I mean, some days I've had a bad day at work, you know, and everyone has them. And I can't wait until my show that evening, because that's sort of like, you know, my bubble bath, if you will. And that's even with some of the nonsense that comes along with that, you know what I mean? Just sounds not right over there. You know, I'm very finicky when it comes to that, but only because I really have a major... I feel a sense of obligation to my fans to sound a certain way, you know, very critical. I am not one to go on stage and say I have a cold tonight, because they don't care. You know what I mean? Quite frankly, and they shouldn't. They're here to pay. They're paying. You know, so sometimes when I see artists out there, you know, famous, and they provide that explanation prior to singing. I mean, like,
why?
You know, exactly. I would not want to sit on you know, on the slab getting ready to be operated on, and my doctor tell me that he's under the weather. I mean, you're here to do a job, yeah, exactly. Get it right.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, you know, and the singers, they do have a major responsibility, because, you know, if you're a bass player, you're a drummer, you can kind of, well, not the drummer, but you can go out there, stub your toe, do break your arm, whatever, and kind of still get to the show. You can't do that as a singer. You have to be wrapped up all the time. You can't, just talking all day is enough to ruin your vocals. And you really have to want to sing that night. Some days you just don't want to, you know what I mean?
Right.
You can be some of the other instrumentalists, and they can kind of be there but not really be there, but you have to be up in front. Hey, how you doing? You know, be all bubbly. And but because I love music, it's sometimes I was miserable before coming on the stage, and they actually end up making my night that much better.
Who are you listening to right now?
Here's who I'm listening
to. What's
in your car? What's in my car right now, and you may find this strange, I listen to Ed Sheeran a lot. I don't know why. I mean, I do. You know, I know that sounds weird, but I like the genuineness of it. I do like Bruno Mars, and I like Music Soul Child a lot. I do like where he's coming
just
from.
Here.
Yes. I can go. I like Fantasia a lot. I like the rawness of her vocals. Okay. I like the honesty of her vocals. Many of who I've mentioned, if you notice, are musicians, are artists that feature real music, real instrumentation.
True.
And that's probably one of the reasons, because one of the questions you had earlier, and that is about when you go into the studio. Although, you know, I definitely didn't come in and out quick, you know, in 2 seconds. One of the benefits of having so much stage experience is that two things. One, I can get it done quick, but not because I'm so perfect, but because I am sort of content with what I do, and I don't feel like it has to be perfect, because I know some nights I sound what I think to be a mess, and I'm like, oh my God, you sounded great tonight, and I'm like, oh my God, really? And I'll take that compliment, you know.
Right.
You're only as good as your last compliment, right? So you have to get to a point as an artist to where you can just say, well, it's a done deal. You know what I mean? Everyone heard it, and you can't reverse it. So it has helped me when I go into the studio to know that I can't actually say, give me another take, but to know when sometime that mistake is a happy mistake and just keep it.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that's probably going to be difficult. Okay. I don't know if you could answer it.
Okay.
Because your songs are like your kids, right?
Yes.
You know, and so I'm quite sure that this new EP,
yes,
that's coming out, this, you got some good stuff that you feel really good about, and I'm not going to ask you which song, because I know I'll be getting that song.
Right,
you know, so everybody else is going to know.
Right.
But what song prior to this EP that you've made,
okay,
that's yours,
yes,
that you would say that's my baby?
You know, I think it would have to be a song called Love You Again.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes, you remember that, right?
Yes.
And it was because it was written about an ex-girlfriend, you know.
Okay.
And I can say that. And many know, you know, who, you know, and she has since gone on, you know.
Okay.
And I think that it meant a lot to me even prior to that. So it wasn't simply because of that. But I actually just celebrated her passing, and I dedicated a song called Say Something.
Okay.
Strangely enough, once again, it's by a group called A Great Big World. And a lot of people have found that song to be a replacement to A Change Is Gonna Come Where I End, because this is one of the reasons why I did Oh Holy Night. And I, as much as I'm a spiritual person, I wanted it to be a spiritual song more so than a Christmas song, because I really believe that we are right now in a state of feeling a bit of despair, you know. Mental illness is running rampant, and you find the issues associated with, you know, the shootings, and I find at this point, and I called in to one of the radio stations once, and I explained to them that I find, first of all, I don't like to sensationalize that, because I feel at a certain point when someone's suffering mentally and they feel like they just want to leave this earth, they want to go out with a bang, and they'll go out and try to top the latest number. I just find that it doesn't make much sense to even give a lot of media attention to that nonsense.
Right, I agree.
They know it's wrong, and they're just looking for if any attention, even bad attention, it will do. So I created, I wanted to sing O Holy Night, and I wanted the video actually to feature all of those. It's not going to, because the producer wanted to do something different, and I allow everyone to have their sort of creative, to experience themselves creatively. But I wanted to show clips of all of these things, up to and including the disasters and the natural disasters and things of that nature, because it kind of I don't know if it's the Earth's way of letting us know that we got to get it together, because yeah. People did pull together, Puerto Rico and things of that nature, and I always made myself available for any of those types of benefits. But so Say Something is really a song that pretty much speaks to when you find that someone is feeling that level of this disparity, they need to get help. Everyone feels low, and they don't, and it's just a matter of how you deal with it,
Yeah, and out of that, comes joy.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
It does.
You gotta feel that.
Yes.
And then you yes. move to joy.
Right? I used to always think that, when someone would say, what's the term? I can't remember the term. It has to do with, everything happens for a reason. That's the term. Okay.
Yeah.
And I always say, that's just, someone saying something because, but I have found certain things that happened that I know would never have happened had it not been for the thing that I was so upset about having happened. You know what I mean? And I'm just
right.
like, wow. Okay. So now I understand. And again, once again, this comes from wisdom. Before I would never have been able to even write a song, much less understand that statement relative to that. And now I can, and that's, I've had conversations as to why did it take you this long to actually release another CD, and the answer is that I didn't really feel like I had anything to say,
And you were living.
Yeah, I mean, and I never stopped the stage, but I just felt
right.
I always find that when someone comes out with product, and this is famous people, mm-hmm. and I just feel like as if I can hear that they just had an obligation contractually to put it out. It
right.
just sounds trash.
Well. We're going to play it.
Yes.
Oh, Holy Night.
Yeah.
Ricky Allen Drawing.
Yes. It's on all forums. It's on,
brother,
right.
I want to thank you. We found out a lot about you today
you.
That we didn't know.
Yes.
But I know there's a lot. Your story is continuing.
Yes.
Please come back when the EP is released in 2018.
Yes. Yes.
I can't wait.
Yes.
So, but again, thank you so much, man.
Thank you. And again, big ups to, Chris, Big Dog Davis, and that whole camp. He's got
my
a
man.
Lot of artists coming out there. Yeah, that's
my man.
He's always a pleasure. He's always fun in the studio with him.
That's great, man. Thank you again, brother.
Thank
Have
you.
A happy holiday, too.
Thank
brother.
You, likewise. And big ups
folks,
to Haven. Yes.
He is O Holy Night, Ricky Allen Drawn, and happy holidays to everyone. And you'll be hearing this song. All of December.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let me know what you think.
My brother. Juan Castillo with you is the electric drum. We will see you next week.
Thank you. Telly up here.
and the soul felt his word. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder break a new and glorious morn. Christ was born. Oh, divine. No. No!